the99hobby.com. Today's podcast is a little bit different. It's a piece of a conversation I had with my friend Omar that started out with my question to him, how did ham radio affect the way your life turned out?
Well, there's many different kinds of things in ham radio that, I mean, I've been very fortunate to been exposed to. And some of the things like today are being talked about, and yet some of the things go back 30 years.
Well, yeah, you asked a question today from something you did in the 1960s. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time.
Right. Yeah, and that question led into, like, doing moon bounce. And I was asking questions how do you make a contact? I mean, you know, moon's a long ways away.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, it's like, yeah, well, do you call CQ moon?
Yeah, and the way some of the Boeing people and some of the engineers when I was in high school were teaching me was that you sent your call like for maybe a minute. You know, like right. You say, CQ, this is like KW7OS, and KW7OS, CQ, and you do this for a length of time, and then you sit and wait and listen. And a lot of this had to be done because we didn't have the technology. I mean, you know, the amplifiers and the receivers and the antennas, they were very crude back in those days. But you didn't really think they were crude because they
right.
were...
It's what you had at the time. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Where today, in talking with the speaker, he can just make a call and then people come right back. And I'm saying, wow, that's right. Something because it takes 3 seconds to do that. And that's sort of a hard thing to do because you have to have antennas, but there's a lot and receivers and amplifiers and things that not everybody can get into. But you can get into a lot of like QRP things we're into with very simple hardware. Some of the transistors that you can buy are like 50 cents, and you can hook these together and build little oscillators. And you don't have to have fancy circuitry and fancy designs, but you can build a complete receiver and a transmitter and a dipole antenna, and I mean the whole thing would probably cost you $10. And there are many books and many people that are in these QRP clubs like we're a part of that can educate and actually show you some of the simple circuitry that you can build. And these are the basics that take you into different careers, because you may build a transmitter and a receiver back in high school. Mm-hmm. And I went through it. And this, in turn, takes you into a whole new realm that you start learning about a simple thing, and then you make it more advanced, and you make it more capabilities. And the next thing you know, you are designing equipment and seeing things that are pretty state-of-the-art. And this brought me into my engineering career, and it
really?
Brought me into FAA and NASA.
Great.
And these are things that a lot of people can get into that actually change your career. And that's where I think people really need to help others to see what they can really go into.
Well, now, when you were a kid, when you probably were a tinkerer, you probably twisted wires and you got electrocuted a few times and so forth.
Oh, yeah, I've been knocked on the floor by high voltages, and yeah.
When did you decide you were going to be a ham operator?
Well, really, yeah, that was very interesting.
That's
because
a tough question, right?
I didn't really know a lot about electronics or radios, but what really inspired me was that a friend of mine, I was over at his house, and he was in the basement, and I came over, and I called for Danny, and he said, come on downstairs. So I went downstairs to the basement, and it was sort of dark. I mean, it wasn't real bright and everything, and I walked into his ham station. Now, I know today it isn't quite as impressive, but we had vacuum tubes in those days.
Okay.
And you had all these tubes were lit up, and he had meters that were moving, and I asked him what he was doing. He said, I'm talking to Japan. Just, you know. I said, what? And he says, yeah, I'm talking to Japan. And he was sitting there on Morse code going up and down. I said, what is that? I never seen that little thing going up and down and this beep, beep, beep stuff, you know. And he said, this is Morse code. And that sort of inspired me. Like, there's a whole realm of stuff that I haven't even seen in this world.
Now, when was that?
This must have been about 1965, maybe. And it took me a couple years to gain the knowledge and the code and getting enough money to buy equipment because I became licensed about 67, 66, 67.
So now this crossed the politics not only of talking to Japan, but there are times when, you know, the U.S. May have been at war with somebody, but we hear that, you know, ham operators have been friends across those boundaries.
Oh, yeah. We ran into that a lot when you were operating, like when we had the Cold War. I used to talk with a lot of Russians.
Sure.
You know, Yugoslavia, right, and all these, you know, countries are behind the Iron Curtain and everything. And so long as you didn't talk politics and didn't talk, you know, certain sensitive subjects like that, everything was fine. And
So as long as you just talked about, you know, the time of day or things that were really kind of boring, or did you talk about, you know, my radio is, 10 watts or 100 watts or this and that? And
right. That's right. And you talked about different antennas and talked about different transmitters. And sometimes you'd find that some of the foreign countries had the same equipment you did. You know, I mean, it was very, very similar. You know, same kind of tubes, designs and all kinds of things that were put together the same way, and you share schematics.
Sure.
Of course, it gets pretty interesting trying to read a schematic from German, in German. I mean, because I didn't speak German, but I was, you know, trying to figure it out.
We heard somebody talking about he had to go to Russia to get a particular tube that was only $10. He could buy it in the U.S. for $50.
Right.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. But you mentioned stuff about, you know, different subjects, and I'll tell you one thing that's very interesting that I ran into, and I used to do this when I come home from high school, high school, you know, like 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th, is I got to know a really nice person. His name was Komo, and he's from Kyoto. And I grew up on the West Coast in Washington State, and it was very easy to talk to Japan from the West Coast versus the East Coast.
Right, right.
And I used to come home from school, and Komo would be calling me. We had a
really?
Schedule worked out just about, you know, like every maybe 3 days a week, where
by default, right,
basically I would talk to him in English.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned English off of me. Like, you know,
oh, that's great.
Like, he would, you know, talk to me, and I'm saying, Komo, I don't quite understand the phrase you're saying. And then we'd talk about it a little bit, you know. And then he'd have his family sit and listen. And then he and I would, you know, talk about this. And I was actually teaching him English, the wording and different things, and it became very flowing. After a while, it was like perfect sentences because of practice.
So you made a new friend that you have you ever met him face-to-face?
I wish I did. I talked to him for several, maybe a couple of years, and I've been invited over to Kyoto, but, you know, I didn't have that kind of money to travel and that kind of stuff, so that was one thing I never got to do, but
right,
but we kept in touch, and then I went off into college and basically lost touch with him. But a lot of these things, when you're in ham radio, a lot of them are memories and things that you do. And you may not necessarily understand the impact, but you may run into these people. And I have over time, people have sent me QSL cards and talked to me, hey, I talked to you when you were in high school. You know,
or that's great.
Or you talk to students. And I've had this happen when I was traveling, and I've talked to students about ham radio or working with NASA and stuff. And I get the students actually call me up when they graduate and tell me, you influenced me through ham radio. I wanted to be an engineer, and I am one today. And this is the kind of thing.
That's a beautiful thing.
That's really, I think, ham radio accelerates in, is that most of the people that are in there, let's say 45 to about 60, a lot of us that are in that, you know, family of people have become engineers, scientists.
That's a really good point.
And you go back, like, one of the big things that inspired me was seeing the Apollo, the moon landing.
Sure.
Well, man, the moon landing,
that
but how did they
July
do that?
July 1969, right. They had the slide rules and everything.
Oh, yeah, I had a slide rule I played with. You know, I had to learn how to play with a slide rule.
Do you still have one?
I gave mine away.
You better.
Yeah,
you better have one.
No, I do have one. Matter of fact, it was my dad's. My personal one that I used for college was bamboo, And at the time, I didn't really need it, but there were freshmen coming in, and I gave mine away to a new freshman that couldn't afford to buy one. I gave him my picket.
Wow.
You know, I gave him a brand, you know, I gave him the one I'd used for 4 years and told him, you could use this, and I want you to, and the only thing I want you to be is an engineer when you're done. And that was it.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun.
All right. You know what? I'm going to let you go back downstairs. We are at LanaCon 2006, and this is a beautiful thing. I love talking to people here, but they all want to go back downstairs. That was Omar Spalding, Kilo Whiskey 7 Oscar Sierra. Thank you so much, Omar, for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. It's been a lot of fun, and I think this is really going to be a nice program.
We're going to do this again. I'm going to call you on the phone, and we're going to talk about your next adventure, and we'll see you again, okay?
That's fine.
73.
From 99hobbies.com.